February 9th, 2023. There is a quorum present. We'll get started first with a presentation by Minnesota Agricultural Education and Leadership Council. Executive Director Tom Ebel. Okay. Well, first, let's move the approval of the minutes, February 7, 2023. Representative Burkle, have you reviewed the minutes? May I have a motion?
So moved.
All right. Representative Burkle moves the approval of the minutes for February 7, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 7, 2023 are approved. So Executive Director Tom Ebel, are you here? Okay, please, yes, please proceed to the testifying table. We're going to get started with the presentation by Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. And Sarah Dornick, Executive Director from MALC. Please identify yourself before the committee. Thank you for being here. Welcome. And proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're actually going to go ahead and turn it over to Sarah to do the introduction on the MALC first.
Thank you, Chair Vang, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Dornick. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, or MALC for short. I'm excited to be here today to share a little bit about the status of agricultural education in our state, a little bit about MALC, and some of the work that we do. So the brief, quick background is MALC is a legislative council that started in 1997 to promote and expand agricultural education opportunities across the state. We are a very small staff of two people, so you've met half the team. Carrie Schwab's in the audience as well. We're housed at the University of Minnesota, and they serve as our fiscal agent. We also report to a board that has all the stakeholders of agricultural education, as well as six legislators, the House and Senate chair or designee from the majority party. We also have the minority leads from those committees and a representative, usually majority member from the education committees. So I know there's a couple of education members, so if you're interested, I haven't got my appointments yet, so talk to me later. So looking at what I sometimes say agriculture education, but I also refer to it as agriculture, food, and natural resources education, or AFNR education. We work in five sectors of AFNR. Agriculture and literacy we do a little bit in. We're going to hear a great presentation from our 4-H members and our extension people. We have the Minnesota Ag in the Classroom through the Department of Agriculture. We have great destination places in Minnesota like Farm America or Oliver Kelly Farm, and just your local communities and organizations that are working to help the general public understand the food and fiber system and how the food goes from the farm to their plate. But the four that we mainly work with are in formal education, so we work with our school-based AFNR education. We have 225 programs and 331 teachers. Our post-secondary, so the thought is either they complete secondary education and they're prepared to enter the workforce, or they move through the pathway to post-secondary education. We also work with our teacher preparation and retention, so that is like our three institutions in Minnesota, the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, the University of Minnesota Crookston, and Southwest Minnesota State University Marshall. And then we also work very closely with the MAAE, the Minnesota Association of Agriculture Educators, to provide professional development and mentorship to retain our teachers. And then the last group we work with is our farm business management instructors. They are out of the seven colleges in the Minnesota state system, and I know Keith Olander here is going to present a little more about that. So we are really working in that career and technical education space, so preparing people for future careers in agriculture, or just preparing them with life skills. I watched the education committee this morning, and that was a really great example of, a student took a class, they went in and were like a dental hygienist, but they still used the coursework that they used in CTE. So our MALC funding, just to share from this, we have three areas of funding that we utilize. We do have money through the Higher Education Committee. It comes through the University of Minnesota base budget. That's used for our operating dollars and our scholarship programs. We also have two appropriations from this committee. One came in 2007 for our grants and special projects. That's at $250,000. It rolls through here to the Department of Agriculture and to our committee. our council. And then the Farm Business Management and Mentorship Programs, that's $2 million a year. That is utilized, or that comes from this committee to the Department of Ag through the AGREET funds, and then to us. A little brief show of the budget in a different perspective. 75% of our budget is spent on those farm business management grants. The other piece I like to talk about on this slide is that 9% for operating. We work really hard to be as efficient as possible with our funding and to get as much dollars out across the state to support schools and organizations. So what does MAILSEE actually do? I kind of brought it down into three kind of areas that we really work in, and I'm just going to dig a little deeper in here, and that's part of the funding pieces. So the first is not funding. It's just all the, like, the big bucket of being the face of agriculture education, right? So being visible, we represent AgEd at all the meetings. We serve as a resource for you all here at the legislature or with our agencies when there's questions. We go and we facilitate a lot of the things for the Minnesota Team AgEd, which is our group of stakeholders that all care about AFNR education. We work to facilitate them. We address, like, if there's a problem. A lot of times, MAILSEE is the ones who are thinking of AFNR every day, so we work hard to bring those groups together and try to address those problems and move AgEd forward. So big bucket, not a lot of funding in that side, but it's where our time spends. The other is where most people know us, because this is where the funding piece happens with supporting and starting and supporting AFNR programs. So we do have our program grants here that I'll dig into deeper. We're also reaching out to schools for those that want to start programs. We're in about 65% of the schools with an asterisk on that, but there are more programs and more access that students need to get AFNR education. And so just trying to find ways to provide access and this resource for students to have that experience in both classroom and a work-based learning experience, and also a leadership experience, which is we'll hear later from our FFA students, and we're pretty proud of them. So the funding, just wanted to show you a little bit in this piece. The $2 million that this group allocates, it says the language says for agriculture education with a priority for Farm Business Management Challenge grants. As you can see here, we do really prioritize those FBM dollars. Again, I know Keith is going to talk about this, but basically these dollars come in. We work with the seven colleges. They get a portion up front. They do some reporting. And then at the end, to get their final payment, they have to meet five of eight parameters. I'm not going to go through. There's two slides of parameters there. But the parameters are around, like, maintaining and growing numbers of teachers and students, professional development, our database, which is important to the state, and engaging, like, administration and studying our demographics. So the other piece that we spend on is our FBM additional instructor grants. We've always had these. They were for general instructor positions across the state, but two bienniums ago we did a demographic study, and so we said we really needed to focus on our specialty crops and urban farmers, and so this biennium we had two positions that were really targeted for those areas, and Central Lakes College was awarded those grants, and they have been hired, so we're excited to have them on board. The other piece here to mention is our mentor program grants. We have four mentorship programs that we help support in the state. Two are at our school-based levels, so one is for first-year teachers, and one is for our kind of that continuing, trying to retain them in the profession. Then we have one for our post-secondary instructors and one for the farm business management instructors. Looking at the other side of that funding, this is the smaller piece of funding, but it has a very large impact. As you can see, just those are grants in the last 5 years. We really try to spread out across the state. We do these through two programs. One is Common Fund, which are statewide grants, and one is Strategic Initiatives, which are those local schools or organizations. About 50% of our dollars go to those school-based organizations. What we spend those dollars on, the majority is for classroom grants. This is part of our statute that we should be helping support equipment. The other big area there that you can kind of see is our greenhouse. Our horticulture has kind of taken off as a significant area, I think, because every student can learn that. It's a great hands-on opportunity for kids. And so I think no matter if you're a rural or an urban school, that plant science area is really a great spot to start kids. Impact, so this is just a one-year example. We directly impact about 84,000, mainly in that elementary and middle school. And then if you add our indirect, that hit over 150,000. And I like to note on this that that's just for 1 year in one piece, like one class. So that's not saying if we buy them a piece of equipment, they might use that for years and years to come. So I think it's actually a much larger number than that, but that's just a one-year example. There's some great quotes. I'll skip that. You can read that on your own. And then the last bucket here is our teacher recruitment and retention. We have had an amazing increase in programs. There is a strong demand for AF&R programs that has been happening the last 5 years. We cannot keep up. We had 12 programs that we couldn't even find a teacher this year. And so we have more and more teachers on our Tier 1 and Tier 2, if you're familiar with that side of the education system. And so trying to find a teacher is very critical because the teacher really makes the program, right? That's what students connect to. And so MAILSEA has taken the lead on teacher recruitment and retention. We are the chair of our State Teach Ag Results, which is a national program that we were a pilot state for that works on we have like 9 strategies, which I could tell you about another time. But we're really excited about those strategies to try to help recruit and retain teachers. But the piece that I wanted to share again is kind of related to funding. Here is on those scholarship funds. Again, these ones are through the Higher Education Committee, but wanted to share. We've had over 20 years in undergraduate program for scholarships. Investing in our students is really important. In about 2012, we started a graduate program, and then in 2016, we started a diversity scholarship, which is a partnership with an anonymous donor. With that, that was very brief and very fast, but I am always excited to partner and share. I know we have some new members in this committee, so if you ever wanted to learn more about MAILSEA or Ag in the state, we're happy to be a resource for you, and we just appreciate the trust the legislature puts into MAILSEA to spend your dollars wisely and to really make an impact across the state. I'll be open for questions if there's time.
Thank you, Sarah. Executive Director Tom, do you have a separate presentation, or are you also here to testify?
Madam Chair, I'm here to testify as part of Bill 1431, which I don't believe has been introduced yet, so I don't procedurally, if you want me to testify in terms of a bill that's not been introduced yet.
That'll be next, yeah. So okay. Any questions to Executive Director Sarah from the committee? Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Dornick, great program, great use, but I especially want to emphasize the teacher recruitment and retention. As you mentioned, we need more ag teachers in our schools, and they've branched off to teach areas and sciences as well. So that's a key area, and I very much support what you're doing in trying to increase the number of kids going into that education part. You know, business could take a lot of them away, can't compete salary-wise sometimes, but we really want to emphasize that work and get all those positions filled that there are openings for in ag education, so thank you.
Chair Vang, yep. Representative Anderson, thanks for that. I will say Ms. Lavinrata was supposed to go before me, and she has all some great data to show you later in the meeting about the teacher shortage. She is really our person who's heading up some of those numbers of the tiers and the shortage. And so it has become a significant piece of our work. And we have our ag ed pieces, but we're also partnering with other education groups. So there's a group called Elevate Teaching. Carrie, my coworker, serves on their advisory. So we're not just like working in a vacuum of ag ed either. We're partnering with other groups to try to do what we can to address that shortage. Thank you for the question or the comment.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair. And to Mr. Dornick, you know, I think, you know, the quote down here is, I think the greatest impact in a career awareness and student curiosity, because it makes science more interesting and relevant. And I think, you know, to echo Representative Anderson's comments, you know, the importance of that. And, you know, as students learn differently, you know, this is an area that, you know, can make science make sense. And, you know, whether it's here or you know, some of the schools, some of the industrial arts, things like that, that are able, you know, the different ways that student learns, and being able to work with that and really help it click. Every student learns a little bit differently, and this is just one of those areas. So thank you for this.
All right. Chair Vang, Representative Nelson, thank you. Yes, the legislature agreed with you, and so in 2006 they approved AFNR to be offered for science, math, economics, and art credit. With the change to physics and chemistry, MALC helped kind of make that shift to that, but you're 100% right. Students sometimes don't always learn the same way. I had a class in Forest Lake. They didn't understand on rolling tables in the greenhouse. Like, I was like, how many plants can you get on that rolling table? And they couldn't figure out until I put the box, the rectangle, and put length, you know, length times width. And then they were all like, oh, yeah, length times width. But actually putting it in context is what's happening down in the Ag Ed department.
All right. Thank you so much, Executive Director Sarah. We'll move on to our next item, which is House File 1431, Representative Tapke's grant funding for MALC. Representative Tapke, please proceed, and we have your first bill for consideration. Please move your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I move House File 1431 for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Is that where we're going with it, right?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
Just making sure. Perfect. So thank you very much, everybody. You just heard all the wonderful things from Ms. Dornick about what MALC does and the great work that's happening across the state of Minnesota from there. And so this bill is really simple. It is a program to have $500,000 a year this year and next year appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Ag for grants to the Minnesota Agriculture to MALC for programs of the council and under Minnesota statute. So it is a really simple bill funding the programs that are going at MALC.
All right. We have Executive Director Tom Eppel for your testimony. So please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Tom Eppel. I currently serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Agriculture Educators. I have been in that position for 7 years. Prior to that, I taught for 37 years as an agriculture education instructor. So our association is a professional group made up of about 416 educators, both at the high school, post-secondary, farm business management, and our teacher education institutions at our three universities in Minnesota. So I'm speaking on behalf of that group. Sarah had already mentioned a number of things that occur with MALC funding. I would like to focus in on the need for the continued grants, specifically on the Common Funds grants for a program that we have offered for our new teachers the last 5 to 7 years. While all of our schools have access to the strategic grants and there's a lot of dollars flow to those, the Common Fund grants are targeted for specific purposes. I want to lay a little bit of a foundation as to some more statistics and numbers for you and then go into our summer professional development sort of program and the impact that makes. I'm confident that Lavinrata has some of the numbers that will be given to you today also. The last 3 years, we have added in the state of Minnesota over 20 new agriculture education programs. The last 5 years, we've added 75 new instructors. That's a key piece to this grant proposal. Fortunately or unfortunately, 38 of those are Tier 1 and out-of-field placement. And I say that because they need lots of support for professional development. They need to be prepared to go into the classroom. 40% of our instructors have less than 5 years of teaching experience in agricultural education. We currently have 226 programs and 331 teachers. I give you those statistics because one of the major programs that MALC funds through the Common Fund grants is our professional development workshops during the summer. We have a lot of new teachers that feel very uncomfortable going into the classroom and teaching a variety of topics. So what we have offered the last 5 to 7 years are 2 and 3 day workshops covering a number of different topics. A lot of them are focused specifically on mechanics, electrical, small engines, building construction, welding. It has included food science, a number of other sort of programs. And they turn out to be 2 to 3 day workshops is what they do. The annual request that we usually get from common funds is $25,000 to $30,000. Sarah's grants and MALC's grants requests continue to exceed what the funding they have. And eventually, as the notes that I've been given, $288,000 in the last few years. So the $250,000 we currently get in grants, that 288 is beyond that. So that would take us to the $500,000 in grant level to be able to do that. So in the last 5 years, we've had 401 of our teachers attend over 25 of those workshops, 2 to 3 workday workshops on those particular topics. So it has been key from a mentoring standpoint and from an educator standpoint to prepare those new teachers going into the classroom to be able to go ahead and have the competent level of skills to teach those courses. I would just share with you a few comments from the evaluations when we do these workshops. These are the actual quotes from instructors. Was one sure what to expect, but so glad I completed the workshop. My confidence for going into the shop tripled after this workshop. We were given tons of resources and, above all, had great hands-on experiences, great workshops and presenters. I learned a ton while at building construction, welding, electrical, and Briggs & Stratton workshops. I thought the woodworking workshop was extremely beneficial. As someone with very little background or experience in a shop, I was able to gain confidence in using machines and safety. I think these technical workshops are very useful and needed for agriculture teachers. Presenters were great and very helpful throughout the workshop. So that's the need we have. We've met that need. For me, it's been very rewarding to be able to prepare teachers to walk into a classroom in the fall, sometimes not even knowing which classes they were going to teach until summer, and have the opportunity available to them to take a variety of courses to prepare for them to actually teach. So speaking very much in support of this bill, the additional $250,000 would be used primarily for grants, is my understanding, and that would it's a need that we have. The other piece that Sarah already alluded to a little bit, we have, at least in agriculture education, we have mentorship programs at 3 different levels. We have our TIP program, which is teacher induction program, specifically for agriculture. We have our PEP program, which is a professional experience program. That is targeted specifically at FBM instructors who are new to the profession, who will receive mentorship for a period of 1 to 4 to 5 years. And then we also have the PIM program, post-secondary instructor mentorship. So all of our agriculture instructors that are teaching at a post-secondary institution, if they're coming from business and industry, going into the classroom, and that's a bit of a transition for a lot of them, we have mentorship programs to support them also, so at all 3 levels. So the funds that we are requesting, that MLC is requesting, have a very, very strong purpose. So those are my comments, Madam Chair and committee members. I would certainly be open for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Executive Director Sarah, would you like to testify?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Vang, members of the committee. Today we are asking for that additional $250,000 to add to our original appropriation that helped originally when it was there, helped significantly move AFNR education forward. But with between demand and inflation over the last 15 years, we really need to increase these dollars. Specifically, we want to focus on 2 areas that was alluded to. A majority would be going to the arts grants program, and then the other half would be going towards our recruitment and retention efforts, so that agriculture teacher shortage. Our grants are really focused on providing access to students, starting new programs, and improving the ones they have. Every year, we're unable to support $300,000 in grant requests. And I'm going to say in my own personal experience, I would estimate that that's low. We rarely ever fully fund a project, so they aren't asking for their full dollars. And number 2, we have very kind instructors. So I've had instructors say, I got one last year, I want someone else to have a turn. So they know these dollars are very limited, and so they work hard to share the wealth, I guess is what I would try to say. And so it's a small group, and there are definitely requests out there that are going unfunded, and good programs. That's my worst part as a director, is when I'm like, we just ran out of money, it's a good project. Like, that's like the worst call I have to make. And so these are just lost chances to engage our youth in the agriculture and food system and untapped employees for our AFNR workforce. The second portion I just want to reference is our recruitment and retention. The demand is fantastic, but again, we're short on teachers, so we would like to work on targeting these dollars towards some of our TEACHAG communications, some of our dollars towards securing our internship program. We do get sponsorship dollars for our internship program, but I'd like to secure, like, a few of the positions with state dollars so I can start recruiting right away, and then I can continue to find sponsors to get more positions available. And then the last, of course, is the professional development. So just thank you for the time and consideration. We're excited to have this opportunity to present this idea to the group.
Thank you. And then we have one more testifier, Caitlin Bemis from the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. You can proceed to the testifying table. Identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Bemis, and I'm the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau represents nearly 30,000 farmers and ranchers from across the state, and I'm here today in support of House File 1431 and would like to thank Representative Tabke for bringing this bill forward. The Minnesota Education Leadership Council provides extensive resources for agricultural education through the variety of programs, which range from partnerships with youth development organizations like FFA and 4-H, or internship opportunities for college students considering going into agricultural education. MLC helps to drive forward our industry. Investment in MLC has paid off in the past, and we believe this investment will continue to pay off for the future of agriculture education across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion to the bill. I'm aware there are no amendments to House File 1431, so Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Apple, it's good to see a lot of new chapters, I think, here in the metro area, FFA and ag programs. How do you reach students that have no background in ag or don't know where their food comes from? I assume that's kind of a challenge. How do you reach those kids, and do you have programs that do that?
Executive Director Sarah or Executive Director Tom?
I certainly can, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. I'd like to tell you I don't have the answer. It is extremely challenging. We have had expansion in the metro area. In fact, I just received a map that shows all the programs, electronic GIS map that shows all the programs. But we're looking at approximately, I think it's 26 programs in the 7-county metro area with 37 instructors. I mention that because oftentimes if you look at agriculture, we don't think as agriculture being in the metro area. I know a couple of the individuals on the committee here this morning happened to was on the Education Finance Committee this morning and heard from Joshua Munoz, who has established a program at Como Park, and he's in 3.5 years. So it is difficult. It is part of Sarah's efforts for recruitment and retention and try to expand those programs. What I can tell you is that in the metro area, looking at St. Paul, Gordon Parks, wrote them all down here. We've got on a different one. Como, you can help me out. Humboldt. And we're just talking, and now, help me out, Sarah. Edison.
Minneapolis.
Edison. We have like about 7 or 8 that are specifically in St. Minneapolis, St. Paul. So we have making strides, but it is extremely challenging. We do a FAST symposium at our January Ag Tech Conference. It's Future Agri-Science Teachers. I do need to mention that Lavin Rada, who you'll meet shortly, has led that effort for the last 5 to 6 years. This year was a highlight. It's a regional activity that we as an association put on. We had student teachers or undergraduate students in agriculture education from North Dakota State University, South Dakota State University, University of Minnesota Crookston, SMSU out of Marshall, U of M St. Paul, and River Falls, Wisconsin. So we were pretty happy with that. So we try to carry those activities on. But to teach the folks that don't have a clue where the food comes from, it is a struggle.
Representative Anderson?
Chair Vang, may I also add, Representative Anderson, my experience has not been actually on the students, it's been on the administrators. They'll be like, we don't have a farm here. And so it's a bigger leap to try to get through the gatekeepers, the decision makers, to start a program. Mankato started one 2 or 3 years ago. Finally, for years and years, we did not have program Mankato in the middle of, you know, ag country. And so they started a program. They had their first students. They doubled the students coming down the next year because students want to take hands-on. They want to learn about it. It's getting through the gatekeepers is my hardest challenge.
Representative Sensamira.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. To the point that we're talking about and how do we recruit students in the metro area. I was, you know, on the committee where we talked about this morning, and I think one point that the ag teacher made, you know, was that he had found that students who come from, immigrant students that come from backgrounds that actually do have rich histories in farming that are maybe first or second generation that are not that disconnected, have actually been really receptive to the programs. And so, you know, and he was a Latino man himself, so I think he was also speaking to kind of the way that he was able to recruit students that maybe didn't normally see themselves within these programs. And so I think it connects to a bigger kind of conversation around, you know, teacher recruitment, teacher diversity, and how are we recruiting maybe people who are bringing, like CTE teachers, who are bringing in a different different kind of experience into the classroom and thus are being able to connect to students in a different way. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a really good point. Any further discussion or questions from members? Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So as a city girl, I'm not that familiar with ag teachers. And I would say, so I would visit my cousins on their farms, and I would see the farm work that my aunt and uncle do. But I would say for me, the state fair was one of the places where I learned about farming. And also in Carver County, we have the landscape arboretum, so we see some of that there. But I'm curious, when you're looking at teaching, what changes do you see, and how are you preparing your students for the future of farming?
Executive Director Sarah?
I'm going to let you take that.
Madam Chair, I will go ahead and attempt to address that question. And I truly appreciate the question. It goes back to one statistic, and that's the fact that less than 2% of the people involved in agriculture are in production agriculture, i.e. farming. We have made significant changes in the last, and I'll take my career, I'll say 42 years, away from the concept that agriculture is just farming. There are tremendous opportunities in all of the mechanical areas, all of the horticultural areas, all the floriculture areas, the environmental science. I believe there is still a perception out there that if you talk about agriculture, they automatically go to the word farming. Whether agriculture today is extremely science-based, it's an extremely diverse curriculum. I know one thing that we're going to probably do for the House Finance or the House Finance Education Finance Committee is to put together just a kind of a quick document of here's all the schools, the agriculture schools in Minnesota, and here's just the course titles they teach. I mean, so we'll be talking about anything in the plant growth, the plant science, the floriculture area. We'll be talking about the mechanical area. I believe one of the slides coming up might have the career pathways that you've perhaps seen, but there are millions of positions in those diverse areas. I'm not sure any student taking agriculture today walks into the door, and I know this, and say, yep, I'm going to farm. The opportunities are just not there, but the opportunities in the industries and the businesses that support production agriculture are tremendous.
Representative Reed.
Thank you for that answer. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Tapke, would you like to renew your motion or any closing remarks?
Thank you so much, Chair Vang. Yes, I renew my motion for House File 1431 to be held over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. And I just want to say thanks to everybody for supporting this bill as a 4-H kid myself through college, collegiate 4-H, and then also my kids being involved in 4-H as well throughout as they're growing up. It's a really great program, and making sure that we're sharing agriculture and making sure that we are finding ways to get people involved is wonderful. So thank you very much for your support.
All right. Thank you. House File 1431 is laid over.
Thank you.
Next we have is a presentation from FFA. Levine Rada from the Minnesota CTE TIP Director, Noah Erickson, FFA State Officer, and Kyle Thomas, former FFA State Officer. If you can please make your way to the testifying table and identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you for being here today. It's good to see you all.
All right, let me get a feel. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and representatives. I am Lavin Rada, and I'm the Executive Director for Minnesota FFA and also the Director of the Teacher Induction Program that was previously mentioned. We're here today to talk about the blue jacket, but it's important for us to recognize that every jacket starts in an agriculture education classroom. Previously mentioned, these are the career pathways that look at career and technical education, but if we look specifically at agriculture, food, and natural resources, we can see that it leads to careers for our students in animal systems, agribusiness, food systems, natural resources and environmental sciences, plant systems, and machinery with power structural and technical systems. There was a map that was also mentioned. This is where all of our programs currently are in the state of Minnesota. So if you look at the blue, you can see these were all of the programs that have existed prior to 2020. Those programs are in yellow, are programs that have been added in just the last 3 years. And if you look at the orange, those are the programs who have added a minimum of one teacher in those past 3 years. Our growth is exponential and unheard of right now. We have 226 programs, 30 of which are in the Seven County metro area, and we've added over 20 programs in just the last 3 years, 25 in the last 5 years. We currently have 331 teachers. Over 50 of those positions are new positions that did not exist 3 years ago. This year alone, we had over 60 brand new teachers enter a classroom in September, just in agriculture, food, and natural resources. Over 100 positions had a new teacher. So that means about 40 teachers moved from one school district to another, and 60 were brand new teachers. That growth is great, but it does need support. More than half of our teachers have fewer than 3 years of experience. 16 are tier one and 25 are tier two. That means that they have not completed a four-year degree in agricultural education, but do have very important skills that they are bringing from career experiences into the classrooms every day. We also have 13 teachers who have out-of-field permissions, meaning they have an education degree in something other than agriculture education, and so we're working to support them so that they can continue to be really great agriculture, food, and natural resources teachers. That support in agriculture education comes through mentorship. The teacher induction program has existed for over 25 years. It's the longest standing agriculture education teacher mentorship program in the country and has been a model for decades. Those 60 teachers that entered our classroom this year are all part of that program, and those who are alternatively certified stay in the program for multiple years. In addition, we have recently expanded that program through partnership with Career and Technical Education through a PELSBE mentorship grant, and that is managed by MNACTI, which is our umbrella organization, and Lakes Country Service Cooperative. So our agriculture program is funded through the MAILSE grant that Sarah mentioned, and then we have additional support specifically for those Tier 1, Tier 2, and out-of-field permission teachers through the Career and Technical Education partnerships. So what is career and technical education? Career and technical education has three main components that are really important for every single student to get. Often you'll see this three-circle model, and they look at the very middle where all of those overlap. But instead, I want you to smush those three circles together and picture a three-layer cake, because we really want every single student who walks into a school-based agriculture education program to get a bite of what's happening in the classroom through developing hands-on skills, a bite of leadership development to develop those social-emotional skills, and some career exploration through work-based learning. So our goal is that every single student has a bite of all three of those levels in even just one course. It was previously mentioned that agriculture education teaches a lot of different classes. In one of your handouts, you will see a frequently asked questions document. The very last page of that document lists the 97 different courses that a teacher with an agriculture education license can teach. As you heard from our Teachers Association director, that requires some professional development to help keep our teachers up to date on the technical and academic skills necessary. But when I was a classroom teacher, I taught everything from food chemistry to fulfill the chemistry credit to welding and small engines, to floral design, to veterinary science. So every day was an adventure, but the important thing is that our students walked away with hands-on skills and an idea of what they could do with their futures. The second piece is that work-based learning. The purpose is for us to explore careers through our education systems. And so students have foundational experiences that focus on career exploration, those general employability skills that we hear our students still need to develop, those financial management skills, as our students learn to take records and keep track of the money that they're spending, workplace safety, which is always very important, and overall agricultural literacy. Once they've decided to explore an agricultural career a little bit deeper, they then have the choice to go into an immersion project and spend at least 40 hours really digging deep into that career through work-based learning. Leadership development is the final component, and that's what brings the two gentlemen next to me with. In Minnesota, we have nearly 16,000 FFA members. That is a significant increase in the last 3 years. Obviously, with 25 new programs, that brings a lot of new students with them. But I will let them share their experiences of where this blue jacket has taken them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Who would like to start first? Is it Noah Erickson? Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Noah Erickson, and I am currently serving as the Minnesota State Sentinel. So I grew up in a rural setting. I grew up in Morris, Minnesota, and I grew up quite literally having a front row seat to the world of agriculture. Most of my days after school were spent sitting in the combine during harvest or sitting in the tractor during spring planting with my dad, learning about agriculture, learning about the farm. But my passion for agriculture didn't really take off until my seventh grade year, where I got to step into the agricultural classroom and I got to step into FFA. And during my time in agricultural education and FFA, I've grown in my leadership. I went from being like this really insecure, quiet kid to now testifying in front of all of you guys. So I've experienced growth and leadership in there, and I've seen a lot of the opportunities that this industry holds for me. I've learned about things outside of soybeans and corn that I learned about in the combine with my dad. I learned about dairy. I learned about how to weld, how to woodwork, how to process meat. I've learned about so many different things through my time in agricultural education, so much so that has had the impact on me that where now I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, and I'm majoring in agricultural education, and I want to have the same impact that my ag teachers had on me, and I want to inspire the next generation of agriculturalists. I want to expose people who have maybe not had that chance to be exposed to agriculture. I want to expose them to agriculture so that they can see where their food comes from. And as being a future agriculture teacher, I got to be a part of the FAST symposium where I got to network with people my age who are going into agricultural education. I got to network with people who are current agricultural educators and learn about what they're doing and experience that professional growth. And that was all in thanks to MAILC and MAAE and the Foundations program, where they really care for the success of teachers in and outside of the classroom.
Thank you, Noah. And is it Kyle Thomas?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Thomas. Last year, I was fortunate to testify before you virtually as the Minnesota FFA State Treasurer. And this past year, I got to represent the state of Minnesota as the National Officer Candidate at the National FFA Convention. Now, my role and involvement in agricultural education is a little bit different than Noah. Because I didn't really grow up in agriculture. I came from a more suburban background growing up in Hennepin County, and I didn't really see agriculture as a fit for me. But in seventh grade, I got the opportunity to take an agricultural education class in a fairly new program, and that's really when my knowledge and my passion for the agricultural industry truly took off. But in my eighth grade year, our school board wanted to cut our program. And I had to testify in front of our school board in eighth grade to advocate on why I thought that school-based agricultural education was important. Since programs such as FFA start in the classroom, had that program been cut, I would not be standing here today. To say it short, agricultural education truly transformed my life. because agricultural education is so hands-on and so interactive, I found a way to learn that was relevant for me in a way that really met my skills. Because of my involvement in agricultural education, because of my incredible agriculture teachers, I was able to then take off and explore what I can do. I'm currently pursuing a degree in applied economics, international agriculture, and agricultural and environmental science communications at the University of Minnesota. And all of that is because of my involvement in agricultural education. As many people have said earlier, agricultural education in Minnesota is expanding exponentially. It's expanding in the smallest corners of our, or the smallest towns of our state, to right in the heart of the city where I grew up. But none of that would be possible without the support of agricultural education programs. And for me, it was really important to have that support because it led me to join organizations like FFA, where I got to represent our state on the biggest stage for the largest student-led organization in the country. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Kyle and Noah, for sharing your testimony. It is always great to hear from students and your experience on this. I believe that is all for testifiers. Do we have any further testifiers? Okay. Questions from the committee? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, maybe for Executive Director Rada. Thank you. I'm really impressed and enthused to see this long course list of all the different places where this is relevant in our education. I'm wondering if there are particular aspects of like conservation agriculture, precision agriculture. I mean, I could put that under lots of these different headings, but I'm wondering if there are particular courses that you could highlight that that address that specifically. Thank you.
Director Rada?
Madam Chair, representatives, there are lots of different places where courses like that could fit. Minnesota Agriculture Education revised this course list about 2 years ago with the Department of Education, and within all of them, you will see that there is a specialty in emerging topics, mostly because agriculture is changing faster than we can revise. And so we left that opportunity in there for those programs to continue to grow and expand where they're needed to. So, for example, I know we have a couple of school districts who are using drones in their program. And so some of them are using them in the context of plant science. And so they're in those plant systems courses in the emerging topics after they've gone through all the fun FAA regulations of getting drone certified. Whereas in another program, it might be used in a forestry context, and so it might be in a more natural resources base. So the great thing about school-based agriculture education is there is so much diversity because agriculture and food and natural resources are literally what everything is made of. And so we've tried to leave it as broad as possible so that our programs can really meet the unique needs of their community.
Representative Purcell?
Thank you.
Representative Sensamara.
Thank you. So this is kind of going back to the comments I was making earlier, just making connection to kind of what we heard in education finance about particularly farm educators or agricultural educators who are come from immigrant backgrounds. But, you know, we've also been talking about in the education committees about heritage and language, heritage and culture language educators, so educators who speak languages such as Somali or Hmong, and kind of how to support those folks in moving into the classroom, because we're hearing a lot in certain districts from families who really want to be able to preserve those languages. I think it'd be interesting to think about, you know, something similar that could potentially be done for agriculture. You know, we know that there's a lot of folks in our community who come with that kind of wisdom about certain crops that, you know, if we don't preserve that, are not going to be a part of the diversity of crops that we have here in Minnesota. So I don't know if that's something that you all have thought about or worked with, but, you know, I know specifically in Minneapolis, the district I represent, you know, we have a Hmong language pathway and a Somali language pathway, and I would love to see that kind of partnered with some agriculture as well. Thank you.
Director Rada?
I love the idea. Thank you,
Chair. I know that we have programs who are, St. Francis, for example, put in a medicine garden with their agriculture education program. So I know programs, both urban and rural, have been working through that. We have a very strong program in Manoman, who unfortunately has not been able to find a teacher this year. But they've partnered with a lot of their community members just to really meet the unique needs of their community and definitely try to preserve that heritage. St. Francis is one example that's coming to mind, but I know Redwood Falls has done some similar processes. So I think that's a great idea to explore. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And following up on Representative Purcell, I was looking for beekeeping among the list of things, but I really want to take the opportunity to thank the students. It appears they have a belief in the future of farming with a faith born not of words but of deeds, so appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So just kind of wondering, what percentage of students would you say come from an ag background versus what percentage of students come from an urban background?
Director Rada.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at our national FFA membership, which is what we have the best demographics for, about one-third of our students come from urban communities, one-third come from rural non-farm, and one-third come from farm. That is drastically changing as it becomes more urban and non-farm, just based on the change of the demographics and population. We have definitely seen that in Minnesota. If you look at the map that is all color-coded, you'll see that a lot of our growth is happening in the urban area, especially as those programs continue to grow to multiple teachers. So we have five high schools in St. Paul right now. That is continuing to grow. Minneapolis Edison kicked off a program. Robbinsdale Armstrong started a program this year. So in Minnesota, we're definitely seeing a shift towards less on-farm percentage-wise into more urban programs.
Representative Jacob?
I really appreciate that. Anytime we can bring city and country, rural and urban together, this is a great opportunity for that. And then one follow-up question both for Noah and Kyle. As a farmer myself, what color tractor should I be driving?
Don't answer that.
Director Rada?
Trick question.
All right. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the pool of diversity in BIPOC participation in your program, FFA?
Director Rada?
Thank you, Chair. We are just starting to collect that demographic data. I can tell you membership-wise, we're about 87% white, and that would leave 13% BIPOC. That is drastically changing as our programs continue to grow. And so this is the first year we're able to track actual participation by the event. And so I hope next year I will have a better answer for you. But we're definitely seeing just everything grow and change as the diversity continues to improve and we get into more and more school districts.
Representative Chop?
Yeah, the reason I pose that question is because I have three daughters and two of them are 20 and 22. But we've been attending state fair competition mm-hmm. and county fair for the last 25 years. As a refugee and being from the API community, I want to let you know that there's a very high interest of, mm-hmm. FFA participant or future participants, mm-hmm. And there's a very high interest. I, as a refugee to this country, had really high interest, but never knew how to enter into mm-hmm. FFA. I was in Boy Scouts and Cub Scout, but the pathway to FFA was always kind of unknown to my community. It wasn't until later after college that I became a small-time, cattleman and farmer, where I raised heifers and steers and Berkshire hogs and goats and you name it, right? Guinea fowls. But I truly believe that to advocate for the agricultural industry and to bring in new farmers and continued farmers, as we know there's a shortage of farmers as these kids go into college, they don't come back to the farm. Mm-hmm. And being fourth, fifth generation, these farms are being sold off to mm-hmm. other people in management.
And so I think it's very important and vital that to continue this pathway for agriculture to grow and to prosper, that we must reach into other corners of the communities and continue to do your work to advocate in other communities, because there is a very high interest in. I hope that you know, next time this year, when we have this conversation, that we will have better answers. So thank you.
All right. Any further questions from committee members?
Madam Chair, can I address one thing?
Go ahead, Director Rada.
That is a great point. The one thing that is important to note that is different between FFA and 4-H, and I know 4-H is coming up soon, is that FFA is in the school district. And so for a student to be able to access FFA, they have to have an agriculture education class that year. And so it was alluded to earlier that administration and policies are often our biggest barrier, in addition to having enough teachers to go around. So appreciate you, all of your support in making sure that agriculture education is available to all of our students so that they do have those opportunities. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Director Rada and Noah and Kyle, for being here today. We appreciate your time and your testimony and sharing your experiences with us. Next is a presentation from 4-H. I believe it's Jennifer Skuga. Please make your way to the testifying table and identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representatives. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the invitation. My name is Jennifer Skuza, and I am the Associate Dean at the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development, and I'm also the State 4-H Director, and so I have those two roles. And what I'd like to share with you today is to give you some programmatic highlights, as well as to share with you some of our demographic information and so forth. You'll have two documents within your packet. One is the PowerPoint slides, so you have that slide deck. And then also you'll see that there's an impact report that's available for you. And so in terms of the presentation today, I'd like to give you our enrollment numbers from 2022, as well as to share some of the other information that's really interesting about the 4-H Youth Development Program, and of course, some of the other work that we do within our center. I also wanted to share some program emphases as well, especially highlighting agriculture, of course, the environment, educational and career pathways, as well as youth leadership. And as you had learned just in our prior presentation, 4-H Youth Development works with children who are the ages of 5 to 19. So we do work with that school-aged youth as well as 1 year out of high school. We are a part of the University of Minnesota, and we are also the largest youth-serving organization in the state, but also in this nation, when you think about the large age span that we work with. And I'll give you a little bit more information on that. And also, as you've learned, we work primarily out of school time. So you'll find that our work happens, or our youth programming happens during the summer, whenever school's not in place, after school and before school. And we do have some in-school work as well. So if you take a look at our final enrollment numbers for 2022, you'll see that in this past year, we made a huge emphasis on growing our 4-H Youth Development Program, as well as retaining our youth. We have over 40,000 young people that are enrolled in the 4-H program, and we have a special emphasis that we've had in place for a while now, I would say at least 4 to 5 years, which is focusing on first-generation 4-Hers. So these are young people who haven't had a generational connection to the 4-H program, and you can see that we are up at 7,000 young people who are involved through the first-generation membership. New 4-Hers, meaning those that have a part of families that have not been a part of 4-H, as well as those that perhaps have a generational connection, we have 10,000 young people who joined in the past year. And we are volunteer-propelled as well, so we have over 7,000 volunteers, and that's growing from 2021 as well. So if you look at a summary of Minnesota 4-H within this state, we have over 40,000 youth. We have over 1,000 clubs, and this includes volunteer-led clubs, after-school clubs, project clubs that focus on a subject matter, as well as site-based clubs where we bring clubs and youth programming to the communities where young people are living. and of course 7,000 volunteers, as I indicated. In terms of our BIPOC representation inside our program, 21% of our youth are representative of diverse audiences, which makes one strong Minnesota 4-H Youth Development Program. I'd like to share with you just a little bit of information on where our youth are living. You'll see that we have 12,000 young people that are living in the central region or in the 7-county metro and beyond. We also have 6,000 youth that are participating in northwestern Minnesota, a little over 3,000 in northeastern Minnesota, 11,000 young people in southwestern Minnesota, and just under 7,000 in southeastern Minnesota. So you can see we have a robust 4-H youth development program across the state, spanning urban, suburban, rural, as well as in our First Nation communities. So one of the things that just came up earlier, you heard about the state fair, and of course 4-H youth development has the 4-H building as well as a large presence at the state fair. We actually have over 5,000 to 6,000 youth who come and share their projects during the state fair. But we also partner with our local agricultural societies, and over 14,000 youth participate in county fairs at the showcase events that we host. And so we see ourselves as wonderful partners with their local agricultural societies and see that as a culminating experience where youth get to showcase their learning as well as their leadership. I also wanted to talk just a little bit about the other types of work that we do within our center. We do a lot of youth development training, and we use a lot of different methods. We recently have moved into podcasts, and you can see we have 74 podcasts on all different topics related to youth development, where adults who are professionals typically or even volunteers are oftentimes our audience for this. We also have a lot of curriculum available in bite-sized portions where our club leaders as well as after-school providers can use a curriculum that is research-based but also engaging for young people in their out-of-school time programming. We have teachers who use it as well. Our educators also write blogs and have quite a bit of following there as well, where we have over 36 blogs produced on an annual basis. We also do a lot of training of youth workers, meaning those that are working outside of 4-H youth development at other youth-serving organizations, and we train over 5,000 youth workers as well as volunteers on youth development practices. And of course, when we think about all the programs, once a young person becomes a 4-H member, they have access to everything that's available in the state and beyond. So in the state of Minnesota in the past year, we had over 1,700 educational programs available for our 4-H'ers across the state, in addition to their club experiences. And of course, our youth worker training as well. So you can see that we do a lot of work within 4-H youth development, but outside. So I want to give you a few program highlights. One, of course, is agriculture, since I know you all care about that within this room. And to give you some examples of some of our agricultural programming, we have a newish program. It's been around for a few years now for the Minnesota State Agriculture Ambassadors. We have over 22 youth who are in that high school age. They are very present at Farm Fest, Farm Bureau, and so forth. But one of their charges is really to deliver education to younger children in classrooms in their communities. And so this year, the topic is on soil erosion and what they can do about it. We also have a lot of clubs and camps and immersion programs happening that all have an agricultural focus across the state. And we were fortunate enough to receive a federal grant, an AFRI grant, so five-year grant, $750,000 to do agricultural education and careers, especially reaching new audiences. And that was just awarded a couple years ago, so we're excited about that. And we also have a lot of programming in place, and in large part due to Commissioner Peterson's support through the Minnesota Department of Ag, something called Bend Don't Break, which is focused on rural youth stress and helping young people to manage their stress and cope and to have a healthy and socially, emotionally positive experience. Another program emphasis that we have is on environment. And so we focus on rural and urban farming. In fact, some of our youth right now are actively involved in Hennepin County on hydroponics. We also have youth involved in wildlife conservation and doing projects related to that, as well as building pollinator habitats. We also have youth working on native plants and prairie restoration, and a youth group that's actively involved in plastics and pollution and helping young people to reduce it. and programming that really helps through mentorship as well as teaching and leadership. So you'll see that we have a lot of young people involved in our educational focus. It's one of our largest growing areas. We also have programming geared toward education and career pathways. We want 4-H'ers who are getting involved in their projects to find that spark and connect it to their future. And so all of our programming has that threaded through it. And we bring young people right to campus, whether it's the University of Minnesota campus, Crookston, Twin Cities campus, but also trade schools, as well as two-year and other four-year institutions. And we are also very involved in making an investment in our evaluation of tracking our youth. Where do they go once they graduate from the 4-H program or from their high school, and finding out what post-secondary institutions they go to, as well as the degrees that they are seeking. Another program area that I'd like to highlight and wrap up my presentation with is, of course, we focus with youth leadership. So we have young people that are actively involved in their communities and helping with strategic planning. An example of that would be in Scott and Carver counties. Right now, they are working with the Met Council and helping with their strategic planning. And we're excited about that because they're involved in focus groups and working side by side with local officials and elected officials. We also had young people just a couple days ago, maybe you saw them here at the Capitol, having legislative visits and having conversations about issues that are important in their lives, as well as the importance of youth development. And of course, we have a very wonderful program that really helps young people learn at a local level, but move them on to regional experiences, as well as state and national experiences. In fact, we have a group getting ready to go out to Washington, D.C. at a conference called Ignite by 4-H, where they'll be bringing their work on agri-science. The plastics group will be there, as well as an equity youth leadership group, as well as others, where they'll be sharing what they've done in presentations, as well as participating in this conference in Washington, D.C. So we see that as a pathway for their leadership. And lastly, I just wanted to highlight one young person who is from Dakota County. She now is living in Michigan, but she received one of the highest awards that you can receive within 4-H Youth Development, which is a national award called Youth in Action. And what Nicole Cash did is she developed, using STEM, what she learned in STEM and 4-H, as well as within her school, she developed a mobile device that is adaptive for toddlers who are learning how to walk, and did it in such a way to where it's affordable to families. And so she has written the handbook on how to build it. She has created a chapter within her own state that she's living now, as well as in Minnesota, and created a nonprofit. Organization and is actively involved in teaching about STEM education and youth leadership and what young people can do to make a difference in their own communities and the lives of others. And so that's Nicole Cash, and I wanted just to take a moment just to brag on her because she just received that award. And so that's in sum what I wanted to share with you about the 4-H Youth Development Program, and I appreciate you listening as well as the invitation, and thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you, Director Scusa, for your presentation. Yes. Questions from the committee? Discussion? All right. Well, thank you so much, Director Scusa, for your presentation and being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. I appreciate it.
All right, next we have is House File 1147, Representative Hansen. This is regarding agriculture research, education, extension, and technology transfer grant program and the Farm Business Management Challenge grant funding. Representative Hansen, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move House File 1147 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, thank you. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 1147 are the agreed appropriations. We've heard presentations earlier before the committee. It's a lot of money, $10 million each year for transfer to AGREET, and then there's some breakdown based on prior appropriations, one of those being the Farm Business Management Challenge grants through MAELC, which we just heard about. So I believe there may be some testifiers, and Madam Chair, I appreciate this being held over. I think there's a couple things to work on as it's laid over. One is, how do we deal with farm business management? Should that be out of a GREET and just dealt with as a baseline rather than having it as a grant. It seems that it's ongoing. And then how do we make sure we've got outcomes and reach new folks through farm business management? And then a GREET as well, how do we structurally make sure that that's inclusive for the future? So I've talked with some of the interest in this and how do we update and modernize, and I think there's a willingness to look at this. So I appreciate the opportunity to hold it over. I believe there may be testifiers, but this is fairly basic, but a lot of money for research and farm business management.
All right, we'll move on to testifiers. I see Vice President Ann Squargle from Minnesota Farmers Union and Keith Olander, Minnesota State Farm Business Management. So if you can please make your way to the testifying table, identify yourself before the committee, and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang, and members. Thank you for having me here today. For the record, my name is Ann Schweigel. I'm a grain farmer in Big Stone County and the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union. Both from my personal experience and on behalf of Minnesota Farmers Union members, I want to share my strong support for Representative Hansen's bill, House File 1147, to increase the state's support for farm business management. Many of our members use and benefit from this program, and we're excited about the opportunity for more farmers to access these services. Since 2014, my farm has been enrolled in farm business management, and utilizing the tools of the one-on-one student-led instruction in different ways as the farm has grown, weathered economic challenges, and found stability. In the early years of enrollment, the farm was in a major period of transition. We were beginning farmers embarking on a path towards transitioning our acreage to organic production on relatively few acres. Keep in mind, this was during a low period in the farm economy and margins were incredibly tight. I was able to use the tools of farm business management to create cash flows, know my exact break-even rates, and evaluate the profitability of any potential new enterprises on our farm. I was then equipped with a business plan prepared and laid out for when I went to my lender for credit on new purchases or annual operating loans on our operation. For the first several years of our farming career, my husband and I qualified for a beginning farmer FBM scholarship program, which offset our tuition costs. This program made tuition costs affordable while we were beginning our career in agriculture. In the last few years, our instruction has shifted while still keeping a very close eye on the farm's financial position. These days, we work closely with our instructor on generational farm transfer between my father-in-law and my husband and myself. As you are all well aware, the average age of our state's farmers continues to rise, and having resources readily available through FBM has been invaluable to both younger and retiring producers as they navigate the complex set of implications of generational farm transfer. I want to thank Representative Hansen for his leadership on this program, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Executive Director Keith, I see you have a presentation as well, so please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang. We'll get there in 2 seconds, I hope. I could get support from technology. I believe we just need to get my slides loaded. In the interim, I will step forward and just do an introduction. My name is Keith Olander. I am the Executive Director for AgCentric, or the Northern Center of Agricultural Excellence for Minnesota State. And I really appreciate Ann's comments. As a great student in the program, and we're going to just share a brief overview of the program so you have some background. I guess for clarifications, as we're talking about the AgREET funds, there is just this $2 million piece that comes through for the challenge grants to the seven colleges for Minnesota Farm Business Management, and we are in the seventh year of this particular program. So with that, let's just begin. I need to start off, though. It is 2023, and we all know that in the room, but this program began in 1953. 70 years, and I think that there's something to be said for an education program, particularly in the farm setting, to survive and make it through the times as we think of all of the things that have happened, as Ann mentioned, through weather, economics, etc. So we celebrate that as we move through 2023, and I want to highlight that. The structure of farm business management in Minnesota is led by the two centers of excellence, as you see highlighted. Megan Roberts leads the Southern Center out of Mankato, and I point that out in case geography would lead you to perhaps seek her out for input or just to see from your perspective on that. But between the two of us, we guide the program forward with the seven colleges. Really, as a facilitator, we support the faculty. We connect to a lot of industry partners. We have a lot of great support, as you can tell, just within the room. And then beyond that, of course, the ultimate is what is student success. And when I talk students, I'm talking about farmers actually on the farm. Vision and mission is before you. I won't read that for you, but this idea of how do we improve the student life as it is on the farm and very individualized from that perspective. This slide simply just indicates these seven colleges. It is unique because we actually have 26 colleges in the Minnesota State Seven in the system. These seven just happen to host the particular program, and that's significant because of the particular nature of the program being one-on-one does lead it to be a little bit more on the expense side than what we see, and so we're talking about seven colleges. The other thing I want to point out is geography. We make sure that we cover the entire state with these seven colleges. And as I talk about 70 years, you can understand there's quite a story as to why these seven colleges, and we can get into that as needed. Very specifically, this is one-on-one student-led program. For those of you in education, this is not a classroom setup. We do some offer online webinars, but largely it is individualized because each farm is unique, each farm has its own challenges, and each farm has its very private finances. And so therefore it is a one-on-one student-led program. And really looking at their business success, it takes place at the business, at the student's site of business, i.e. at the kitchen table, sometimes in the office or in the barn, whatever the case may be. And we use this tool called FinPAC. And I'm going to use those terms. I want to kind of see that, but it really standardizes that and brings us to a database and thus the public aspect of our program, and I'll get to that. This particular piece shows you last year we had 2,293 producers, farmers, that completed an analysis. In other words, they determined every break even for every commodity on their operation and then put that into a database for us to use as a state and nation. And you can see the density coverages there. I'll just point out you can see Polk, Stearns, Goodhue, and Martin counties are the most dense when it comes to our population of FBM students within those counties. But again, covering pretty much the whole state. The four that are white, we did not have an analysis. We do have students in three of those four counties that I'm aware of. So we're actually in 86 of the 87 counties as we talk and go forward with that. Okay, this one is very detailed, and we're not going to spend a lot of time. But I think it's important, as Ann shared, just a great scenario of a tool. What's an educational tool that FBM looks at? You can't read this perhaps in your packet if you want to look at it. Really what this is, the idea is that every commodity, and this one highlights soybeans. I'm just picking out one of them. How do you compare as a farmer to your peers, in your peer group, in your size? And then where are the costs or expenses that lie inside or outside of what we would consider normal? This is critical in management. For the first time last year, our average farm in the database exceeded $1 million gross sales. And to some of you, I know you say, eh, not so much. But when we talk about the average farm size now in our database exceeding $1 million, my point is when we look at 2022 coming in with inflation, we know that number is going to grow. It is a lot of money for an individual producer to manage. But it is important that in profitable times like we are now, we manage well. So this particular tool, I'm going to do my best to try to highlight just an instance. Let's just pick on fuel and oil. So in a program, we may look at this, and by the way, the yellow is just where the particular farmer lies in that scheme. But if we notice in fuel and oil, they're at 1943 versus the median is 1264. Your parents maybe said to you why you're spending so much money on gas, right? And the idea here is we might say to a producer, why is it that it's taking a little more fuel, right? And it's the idea of not just in this concept, but how do we break that down in a particular operation? And we can do this with crops and or livestock. But again, it's a teaching tool and about acute management of dollars and resources on the farm. And I think Ann did a super job of talking about that. Additionally, I wanted to talk a little bit about our program. It does include tuition at the two-year colleges. So these two centers of excellence that Meg and I lead, we have seven colleges, 62 faculty. Each faculty will carry roughly about 50 farms. So it keeps them very busy throughout the year. Additionally, we have partners that come in and help support what's going on with the tuition side to help, as she mentioned, beginning farmers. So let's just take a look at a few of those. I brought all this slide up together because you've heard of some of these. MealC is a critical partner, and the $2 million that come into the 1.6 particularly in the challenge grants, critical. The Department of Agriculture, and Commissioner Peterson is in the room, we appreciate the Beginning Farmer Program support, which, as Ann alluded to, is important to her. We've also added urban agriculture and specialty crops positions, as Sarah already alluded to, thus diversifying our student base, and then the mentorship program. But there's also some very specific practices that we like to dive into, and one is the organic farming, and so we've grown the database, in this case, up to 93 farms. And the idea is this, that if you want to start in organic farming and you don't have any background or history, you need to go somewhere to start to determine the benchmarks or break-evens. And so we've done that through this organic grant, and part of that is to grow that. Again, very busy slide, but you look at it from this standpoint, we're working in areas of precision irrigation. So those that are irrigating, how are we mitigating water use and energy use and being acute managers of those inputs, again, from our economic side. Undercover crops. We are all aware of what the environmental impacts of farming are, so we've partnered with the Environmental Defense Fund, the Morgan Family Foundation, and Extension Risk Management. We are in the first year of 100 farms specifically monitoring the costs of cover crops. We do not get into what they sequester in carbon. We have partners that take care of that. But we know as farmers look forward, they need to be viable to their own family economically, but they also need to be sustainable in the environment. And cover crops is one of those tools. And so we're excited to bring that forward. I also believe that this is one of the largest studies in the country that will be coming out in 2022 data, which will arrive in about 3 weeks. We'll begin to tell that story. Next is the Water Quality Certification Program with the Minnesota Department of Ag. We have 94 farms in there. Again, we benchmark the fact that if you are a water quality certified farm, does it damage your profitability? And so we're being excited to be able to tell that story with them. The Intertribal Agriculture Council is another sort or another specific group of Native American farmers that are part of the project, and we're looking at them from their perspective so they can talk within their particular culture, what does it mean to have certain practices, and how does it affect their profitability? Then there's this group over here called the Headwaters Ag Sustainability Partnership. So that, obviously, Mississippi waters is what we're talking about. But within a specific watershed, if they take on certain practices, how does it affect their profitability? Again, we work with outside partners, one perhaps like Houston Engineering, that would take care of the aspects on the environment. We take care of the economic. And then the newest one that we were just awarded through the federal program with the Edge Dairy Cooperative in this climate smart commodity world is looking at dairy specifically and partnering with our neighboring state to the east, Wisconsin, and looking at the impacts of environmental applications they put on their farm and what it means to farm profitability. I share all these so that you begin to see about, yes, as Ann talked about, the on-farm economics is first and foremost in student success. But there is a tremendous growth and new programs and opportunities for the state of Minnesota to learn from each of these aspects as we produce the data in each of these areas, guiding not just state policy but also federal policy. As we are aware, we've got a federal farm bill coming up for renewal.
Director Keith, we are running a bit of short time, okay. So if you can speed up the presentation.
Perfect. Thank you. I will move right through it. Very quickly, we already know then from a consumer perspective that one out of two consumers are looking to figure out how do we look at the environment as well as economics, and I've already touched on that. I just wanted to say that to see more of that, you can go to Successful Farming, the November edition, and you can do that. Going on, I'll move very quickly then on this one. This is another example of how we take the economics and move it to the comparison of what we see in the environment. So in this case, this particular study, this is from HASP, and this is around soil conservation, soil carbon, and greenhouse gases. And how are these metrics coming up to be able to do that? Other new programs then I wanted to highlight, Dr. Ryan Nicol has been hired as an urban FBM instructor serving the 7-county metro, just started in July, as well as we brought on Eric Highmark in specialty crops. And both of these programs are targeting what we would consider non-traditional programs and really growing diversity within FBM. And we're very excited to have them on board and bringing them forward. Two things I'll highlight from the handout about what do we do more broadly in the programming. You can see here students, this was their results, accounting, record keeping, cash flow planning, and financial statements are some key elements, as well as do you believe that your farm is in a better financial situation or position? Overwhelmingly agree. We can get into the strongly disagree if somebody wants to ask about that. And then I want to end on these three slides very quickly. In our system, this is the direct costs, and this is where I come back to the 7 colleges. We have grown roughly 25% over this time span. which is 5% a year, not that big a deal. I will highlight, though, that one of the challenge grant parameters is that we would not only sustain but grow our program, and we have done that with 8 instructors, thus growing direct costs. So then tuition comes into play, and you'll see that has grown between from 4.4 to 4.7. Part of our issue on the early side was that we were flat on tuition in terms of what we could charge, and the challenge grant fills that gap. However, you see at the top, we have $354,000 in FY15, where direct costs for the colleges has expanded out to $1.9 million. Thus, the request that we look at how do we close that gap off, and certainly appreciate Representative Hansen's efforts to try to do so. So the only last comment I'll make, Chair Vang, before I wrap up, is that on the last page, as far as critical to the farm economy, this FinBin database, which is what originated the challenge grants to begin with, there is a lot of public good beyond just the student success that I talk about. The 40,000 queries that come in often come from the lending world and the policy world to help drive both of those as we help new and beginning farmers start. And we think in times of profitability, but there's times when it's not so profitable. And how do we help farmers manage during those situations? Thank you, Chair, and I'd be open to questions.
Thank you, Director. We do have one more testifier, Caitlin Bemis from Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. If you can identify yourself before the committee and please proceed. And if you could keep it concise, too.
Thank you again, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Bemis, and as I said, I'm the Public Policy Specialist for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I'm here today in support of House File 1147, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this bill forward. As Keith and Ann so put it together so eloquently, the Farm Business Management Program is crucial to farm owners and operators, as well as people interested in farming by meeting their business and personal goals. We've heard from our membership who have utilized this program that it greatly assists them in making sound business decisions, leading to greater success on their farming operations. The AGREET program attracts research professionals to Minnesota, giving our farmers and ranchers access to the technology and tools they need to advance their farms into the future and beyond. It is through investments like this that we'll continue to strengthen those tools for our farmers. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion, questions from the committee. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To either Representative Hansen or to Keith, should use your last name, sorry. Anyway, so the increase in funding, is it more to attract more students or to cover a bigger share of their tuition?
Director Olander?
Thank you, Chair Vang. Representative Anderson, I appreciate the question. The Challenge Grant Program goes in to help the colleges mitigate costs within the program. As I pointed out earlier, it's a one-on-one program, critical for its success to be able to do that. However, then to look at those 7 colleges carrying it, not the Minnesota State system as a whole, how do we just cover the internal costs of the system to be allowed to be offered? The other alternative would be is that we're going to have to look at significant increases in tuition, which is, again, is a legislative issue. We were to try to take a certain program and bring it out of the context of legislative directives. So it's primarily for the colleges.
Representative Anderson, all right. Further questions? All right, closing remarks, Representative Hansen.
It's a great program. I think we can work on this as it's laid over. I look forward to doing that and appreciate if anybody else wants to co-author. There's plenty of room I see on the bill here, so I think it's a good bipartisan effort. Appreciate your support and renew my motion to lay it over.
All right, thank you. House File 1147 is laid over. Thank you, members. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 14th, 2023, and this meeting is adjourned.